WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-9636. Dial that into your phone. Call into the show. We love hearing from our listeners. Coming up later tonight, Donald Trump's first 100 days have come and gone. What has he done? He's done a lot more than he's done. That's the truth. And we are going to get into the meat of that enigmatic statement after the 8 o'clock hour tonight. In the meantime, Lisa Nichols, hello.
Hi.
And now that you have a microphone, you can actually contribute to the program.
Yeah, you're not muting me out.
Like I may regret that. I may regret giving you a microphone. We'll see.
I feel like you regret that every single week.
No, most weeks I don't. Most weeks I'm happy to have you.
Yeah.
As long as you're not mutilating place names or mutilating people's names or, you know.
I get one pass a week.
Yeah. You get more than one pass a week, but, you know, it's live radio. We don't operate off of scripts here.
Derek, I am not perfect. You know. I'm so far from that.
It's radio. You're supposed to be perfect. Every single time you get behind the microphone, you have to be perfect.
I try to be perfect for you.
I know. Mm. And it is appreciated. And you succeed more often than you fail. So,
that's why you kept me on here for so long.
It is. Well, that's that
want
you won't
you
go
to
away.
Know, though. Yesterday actually was my 5-year anniversary from the first time ever being on this show.
Wow.
I know, I should have posted something on Facebook.
You should have.
You had mentioned me in the opening. That was when it was called The Whole Truth. Shay was the other co-host, and I was coming on giving my sports expertise.
Wow.
And look what you've done to me. You've molded me out of this sports expert, as you dubbed me 5 years ago, into this.
I should dig back and see if I have a copy of that, because something tells me.
Conservative, crazy millennial.
Something tells me it sounds an awful lot, an awful, see, I'm talking like you already. It sounds an awful lot like, well, today in Red Sox sports news, Doug Martinez is you know, you've come a long way, baby, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. All to you.
A long way. Yeah.
Mold no, it's you're a true artist.
Well, I don't know about that, but.
No, you know what? You know, in all seriousness,
I will put you alongside anybody who's working at any of the commercial stations in the city right now.
No.
Because you are that good.
Derek, in all seriousness, you have completely changed or given me the ability to look at, whether it's a news story or just life in general, a different way of looking at something. And I really think that's what we try to do on the show. We never will stuff our opinion down your throat and we're always open to listening to both sides. So, you know, I say it to you every single week. Again, thank you.
Yeah.
And
no, my pleasure.
5 years.
It's been wonderful to be on this journey with you.
Yeah.
Because you bring an incredible perspective to every program, and you are fierce in defending yourself. And you are also equally fierce in listening to others. That is a rare combination these days. Most people are just fierce about defending themselves and shouting everybody else down. You are what more people should be like. Because we'd get a lot more done.
So now I can't fight with you this show. I like you.
Sure you can. Believe me, I'm going to say something stupid within the next 10 minutes, and you're going to have every reason to come after me. So let's get that started with whatever's going on in the local news.
All right. Well, in local news, we learned, let's say goodbye to some sunshine in Boston Commons.
Ugh.
Mayor Marty Walsh's bid to get a skyscraper built on city-owned parcels scored a big win Wednesday when Boston City Council agreed to amend the law that protects the Boston Common and public gardens from building shadows. Council members voted 10-3 to rewrite 25-year-old laws restricting shadows on the two historic parks, which would allow Millennium Partners to build a 775-foot tower on the side of the city's Winthrop Square garage. Also an eyesore for the city. Preliminary studies by the developers show that the building would cast additional shadows both on the parks at certain times of the year and day. The garage is in the shadow now, needs approval by the Massachusetts legislature. Millennium has agreed to pay the city $153 million to buy the shuttered Winthrop Square garage. And Walsh administration officials have said the deal provides, quote, a once-in-a-generation chunk of cash, which is planned to be used on improvements of park and housing in Boston.
Yeah.
Of
yeah.
Eye roll.
Yeah.
You know, once again,
Mayor Mahdi's sitting there and he's saying, how quickly can I flip this money into the hands of the unions so that I can get reelected? That's what this is. This is the...
You said that key word right there.
Yeah, this is the Marty unions. Walsh reelection fund is what this is.
You know, unions, again, got what they want. Congratulations, Marty Walsh. You just scored a gaggle of votes for your election coming up in November. You know, so, these city councilors, though... say that they're, you know, experts on trees, and they claim that these shadows won't disrupt the growth, when actually you have scientists coming out this morning saying, well, no, it is. I mean, you need a specific amount of sunlight to generate photosynthesis. And
the shadows aren't going to kill the trees. We're talking about shadows on the common and the public garden for... you know, maybe a couple of weeks out
but
of
again,
the year.
Again, another building. And we're talking about, what, 775-foot building?
This is the bigger issue. Do we need a 775-foot skyscraper?
I understand that, yes, it's not the prettiest building. And the rundown garage that is this revamping of the financial district in Chinatown and near the garden, public gardens. But, like you just said, is it necessary?
But here's Boston, right? We're going to take down a parking garage and we're going to put up a 775-foot residential building that will not have any parking. There will be no... I guarantee you right now, if there's parking, it'll be like 10 spaces.
Welcome to the Seaport in Boston.
Yeah.
Before you had, I mean, what, going back 6 years, there were over a dozen parking lots. Do you know how many there are? Like, open parking lots.
None.
There's zero.
Well, there's one left, isn't there?
You have to go all the way down near the fish piers, which is the Harpoon garage. Everything else is underneath the buildings.
Yeah.
So you're talking about if you want to go out to dinner, if you're lucky enough to snag one of the very, very few parking meters, which are now, in fact, being ran on peak times.
Oh, you mean the 20 on-street parking spaces that still exist?
That everybody stabs each other over.
Because it beats paying $40 to park in the hotel garage. Mm-hmm.
It's like going to the North Shore Mall during Christmas time. You just follow people from the front entrance of a building to their car.
That's why I don't go to that neighborhood, ever.
It's
ever
insane.
There's no parking.
And the price gouging right now that's going on, it's incredible. And like you just said, $40. This is what's happening in downtown. Do we need it? No.
No.
But Derek, the money's going to go towards the kids.
It's not. It's going to go toward the unions.
And it's going to go to the parks.
It's going to go toward the unions so that Mayor Mahdi can buy his reelection.
Exactly.
That's what's happening. And when Mayor Mahdi wins reelection with 100% of the union vote, you will know that the Millennium Partners building did its job.
If any of our listeners are new and are maybe living under a rock and don't realize what the climate is here in Boston, basically you have a mayor that is completely controlled by the unions, always was and always will be. And the people of Boston are not number one.
No.
Unions are number one. Always.
That's why we got a failed Grand Prix bid. That's why we got a failed Olympic bid.
But everybody in Boston is connected. So whether we're talking about John Fish, who is the head of Suffolk, who is completely controlling all of the construction in Longwood Medical Area, and including parts of the Seaport District, you have a really, really small amount of contractors that are owning Boston. In turn, they're hiring only union, because if you don't hire Boston Union, there's no way that you are going to get regulated for construction. Forget about it.
Steve Cashman is a great guy. I need to say that, by the way.
You are going
to
be sitting
in Steve. I like
City Council purgatory forever.
Yeah.
So,
but that's what this is. The city does not need this building. The city does not need more residential space, because the city is rapidly on its way to becoming unlivable, because we have no parking and we have an overtaxed, unreliable public transportation system. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to get anywhere?
No, and that's reality. We look in the service industry where you have huge name chefs that, from Boston, that are outsourcing and putting restaurants in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Because people don't want to go to the city.
Well,
I mean, don't get me wrong. And I'm not saying that people don't, because I work in the city and our restaurant is doing very well. But if you look at the numbers, they've gone down every single year.
Yeah.
Because it is too hard, like we just pointed out, to park, to even get in if you're not taking a car. Maybe or maybe not, the T is running. Boston is becoming so overbuilt that, once again, Mayor Marty Walsh is selling the soul of the city to contractors.
And there is no reason to go.
It's plain and simple.
There's no reason to go there other than the Fleet Center or the TD Bank North Fleet Garden or whatever it's called these days, Fenway Park, Symphony Hall, and the theaters. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason. Anything, any other reason you would have to go to the city of Boston, you can achieve far more painlessly out in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And those of us who live in the suburbs know and love that.
Ask anybody in the suburbs, hey, what do you want to do for dinner if you're, you know, getting some friends together? Probably 9 out of 10 times your friends are going to give you an eye roll when you say, oh, let's go to Boston.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a pain in the butt.
Yeah. If there's a concert or something like that, that's one thing. But anytime somebody says, I got to go to Boston on Saturday for a Red Sox game, $50 for parking.
Mm-hmm.
You're gone right off the... As soon as you say, go to Boston, $50 for parking.
It's true.
I don't have $50 to spend on parking every time I want to go do something.
Mm-hmm.
I can go park in the mall for free. I can go park in back of Main Street of Melrose for free. I can go park in certain places in Salem for like $2 for 6 hours. Why am I going to the city?
Mm-hmm.
What have you got for me? Nothing.
But... Again, we say it. This administration is continually ruining the city.
Yeah. Well, this has been going on for decades. I mean,
of course it has.
War on parking in the city of Boston is nothing new.
Just look at the past decade and the buildings that have gone up. It's ridiculous.
And they don't get it because they have a captive audience, and the captive audience manages to keep businesses alive.
Mm-hmm.
But you're correct that you don't see these four-star chefs flocking to the city of Boston. They know the problems here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, New York City, at the very least, you got a great public transportation system. You've got tourists all over the place constantly, and you've got cabs. So you can get anywhere you need to go in New York City. And it's a pain in the ass, depending on what time of day it is. But at least you can get places. Boston, is the train even showing up?
Anywhere between 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock, forget it. It's going to take you an hour and a half. I mean, when I'm working in South Boston to Dorchester, it would take me an hour and a half on a Friday afternoon. 5 miles.
Yeah. Is the train even showing up? Is the train going to go where it's supposed to go?
There's not even a train into South Boston.
Do we have to transfer to buses at Copley again?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a nightmare.
Once again.
It's a nightmare.
Thanks, Marty.
In national news, President Donald Trump released an outline of his tax reform package, which critics say is too heavy on cuts and too light on reform. The plan calls for streamlining the current 7 income tax brackets into 3, with maximum tax rates of 10%, 25%, and 35%, doubling the standard income tax deduction, eliminating alternative minimum tax and estate tax, and reducing the top corporate tax rate from 35% to 15%. President Trump is also pushing for a one-time tax for businesses that repatriate some or all of the $2.6 trillion in profits held in overseas bank accounts.
All right.
We're going to pay for it with growth. Growth.
Two questions. One, how are we paying for it?
Growth.
And two, how are we implementing it?
Growth.
Oh, is it those magic beans?
We're paying for it. Someone in Congress actually referred to it as magic beans.
Yep.
And I laughed because, and here's the thing. This is not what most of us would consider a tax plan. This is a laundry list of demands from the White House, and Donald Trump has a different approach to these things than other presidents. Some presidents will come in with a fully realized, I've had a team of economists at this, we've done all the breakdowns, this is what's going to happen, you know, these are the projections kind of tax plan. Donald Trump has written up a wish list and put it in front of Congress and said, go do this.
Yeah.
Congress is immediately saying, we can't afford that.
Mm-hmm. No, of course, everybody first initially wants to say, well, how is this going to affect me? So some bullet points, and from what we can understand in this new tax reform. So one, larger standard deductions, as you said.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Means lower tax bills.
Married couple, you go from a $12,000 deduction on your income taxes to a $24,000 deduction.
Mm-hmm.
That's a win. So that's more money in your pocket.
Also, most tax deductions will be going away. All individual tax deductions would be eliminated, with the exemption of deductions related to house ownership, charitable contributions. How do you pronounce it?
Mnuchin. Apparently.
Yeah.
We can just call him Munchin. Treasury Secretary Munchin.
That's what he was saying. Also, again, fewer tax brackets. We're now going to, what is there?
We call him Munchkin.
10.
Steve Munchkin.
It sounds better.
Yeah.
Now we're going to 3.
Yeah.
So that's 10%, 25%, and 35%.
We don't know what the cutoffs are going to be for those tax brackets, by the way. But you could generally assume that the 10% tax bracket would apply to people, you know, just a bit above the poverty level after deductions. And the 35% would be $1 more than the maximum average annual salary of a congressperson, because that's what that rate has been set at for the last several decades.
Mm-hmm.
So if Congress makes $265,000, your average congressman makes $265,000 a year, the 35% tax rate kicks in at $265,001. That way, Congress doesn't get taxed at the same rate as everybody else in America.
Oh my gosh, you would never want that to happen.
There's a great little bit of political trivia that you can amaze your friends with.
Yeah, but you know, it's so much of this is, as you said, it's giving a statement, but really no details to it.
Yeah.
So it also said there are going to be bigger tax breaks for parents. So that's included in healthcare and paying for that. But again, very few details are provided.
He does want to establish a tax-free child care credit, which may or may not work for people. It depends on your ability to actually set that money aside.
Yeah, so that's a tax break that allows parents to reduce their tax bills from upwards of $2,100 based on how much they spend on child care.
Correct. It's going to be based on average cost per state, mm-hmm. rather than a simple, you know, formula that doesn't work for places like Massachusetts and California, but really works in places like Mississippi, where life is cheap.
Also, saying there are going to be reduced tax rates for business owners.
Yeah.
So,
the reduced tax rates for business owners gets a little bit tricky, because what he's talking about specifically is the new 15% cap on corporate earnings.
Mm-hmm.
There are a large number of small businesses in this country.
Well, no, and I think that's what it's good for.
And we're talking about small business as defined by number of employees, not by earnings.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about law firms, consulting agencies, stores, various farms, various enterprises, where they've been dodging the corporate taxes by declaring their income on their income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been taxed at a 39% rate, which is not beneficial to anybody.
Yes. Yeah, so some of these small and family-run businesses, they're subject to these individual income taxes, which, as you said, 39.6%. Under the new plan, they would be going by the 15%.
Yeah.
Is this good? Is it bad?
Well, the reality is, if you eliminate the deductions and actually get the billionaires in this country to pay 35% on their annual income, then everything works out.
Mm-hmm.
Everything evens out. You have to get rid of a lot of loopholes for that to happen. This is why people like me have been advocating for a flat tax for a number of years, because the flat tax has no deductions at all. Your mortgage interest would be the only thing that you would get to deduct. Everything else, it's 9% off the top, 10%. Goes straight to the government. Simple. Don't need an IRS. You fill out a postcard, you send them your money, or you collect your refund, and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of accountants are going to be out of work. they'll find jobs doing other things.
Now,
there's always demand for good accountants.
Trump, we didn't hear him say this. Munchkin said it, but you know, Trump officials essentially...
Please call him Treasury Secretary Munchkin so that the listeners know who we're talking about.
They're essentially arguing, though, that the benefits from these tax... In trying to justify how this is going to work, that the tax cuts will trickle down into higher profits for these companies, which in turn will create higher pay.
They will reinvest.
Yes.
And they will pay their people more. People will get
to keep... So it's a slow trickle down to the actual individual to have more income.
Well, it's not necessarily. If I get to double my standard deduction and my tax rate drops from 29% to 25%, that's an extra 5% of my income that's in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's after my... tax-deductible IRA contributions and all the rest of that, I get an extra 5% cash to play around with in a year. I'm probably going to go make a major purchase or a bunch of smaller purchases.
Which is taxed.
And that's going to benefit the economy.
Mm-hmm.
The real linchpin of this, I believe, much like Mayor Mahdi's 765-foot tower, is Donald Trump's ability to repatriate that $2.6 trillion. If you get that $2.6 trillion back into the United States and you can tax that at 15%, or he may be looking at a lower number, you're going to be able to pay for this in the short term.
Now, you're talking about the money that these large corporations are sending out. So we're talking about the big players.
All the money that Google and everybody else is offshored to mm-hmm. keep it away from Uncle Sam and his taxi hands.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get that back into the country... and he can get a one-time tax payment on it, even if it's 10%, that's still, I believe, $260 billion.
No, and of course, it's naive to think that...
That's a lot of money.
...companies are actually playing by the rules.
Yeah.
And doing what they're supposed to and taking in their income and their earnings.
Oh, no, they're playing by the rules. The rules allow them to get away with
this. I was going to say, but there are loopholes in the rules. Why do I always forget the name of the, it was sort of like a scandal that came out with all the offshore
Mossack
accounts.
Fonseca.
Yes. Which came out last year, which basically revealed how many companies and how many individuals had these offshore piles of money.
Short answer, everybody.
Essentially. And technically... it's legal.
Yeah. Well, everything that Mossack Fonseca was doing was completely legal.
Mm-hmm.
Ethical?
Well, that's debatable in question.
You know, where money is concerned, we don't really like to talk about ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Ethics, the more money you have, the less concerned you tend to be with ethics, has been something that I've discovered in my life. I don't know if it's a universal truth, but it sure happens a lot. In world news... France's far-right Nationalist Front Party, led by Marine Le Pen, had one of its strongest showings to date in the first round of presidential elections on Sunday. Le Pen won 21.4% of the vote, finishing second behind Amanche and its neophyte leader Emmanuel Macron, who at the age of 39 could become France's youngest president. Le Pen has called for France to abandon the euro and drop out of the European Union, to expel illegal immigrants, and to close so-called extremist mosques. Macron has called for a smaller government, lower corporate taxes, and stronger ties to the European Union. The two will debate on May 3rd, ahead of a final runoff election on May 7th. So, a week from Sunday, France gets a new president.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to the polls, it ain't going to be Le Pen.
If you listen to the polls, you would think that only two people are running, when in fact there are 11 candidates that are currently running.
Well, there's only two left in this runoff. There were 11 going into this
yes.
thing, but there's only two left
mm-hmm.
now.
And again, we talk about the state of France right now. You have a country that is facing 10% unemployment, has suffered several high-profile terrorist attacks.
Yes.
Look at the fatal shooting that happened last Thursday. Obviously, the Paris attacks were the biggest. The attacks in Nice, you have a country that has a lot of turmoil.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Le Pen is running on is this what some people call almost like borderline xenophobia, because she has said that it's kind of like a making America great again and we're getting rid of all the illegals. Essentially, that's what she's doing in terms of France, understanding that the European Union has taken in millions of refugees from Syria. And we've talked countless times on this show about the stress that it's putting not only on infrastructure, healthcare, and so on and so on.
Well, you've had the ongoing problems in Calais,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you've had all these African migrants who are just bottled up because they cannot get across the border or across the channel into the United Kingdom. And there were thousands of them stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
And they tore down the camps. Guess what? The camps are starting to come back again.
And it's a tone that you're seeing with what happened recently with Brexit and Britain removing itself from the European Union. It has been said that Le Pen wants to remove France from the European Union. So, of course, Europe does not want her in. I mean, think about what a blow that would be to it. But you're seeing this so much in many of these countries where it's kind of you have your hands up and they're defeated and not really knowing what to do. So in comes almost this popular candidate to these people trying to take back their country, essentially.
This is, in a very real sense, the last line of defense for the globalists. If they lose France and France leaves the European Union is, for all practical purposes, dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because
of course.
What you're going to have left is Germany. And Germany is going to be calling all the shots. And Greece is going to walk away. You can reasonably mm-hmm. expect Spain and Italy to walk away in the not-too-distant future.
You would think Greece would walk away with the amount of debt that country has.
Yeah, Greece will walk away and stick its, you know, thumb its nose at Germany and say we're not paying the bill.
If it's grape and feta.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah, we're gonna keep making our yogurt and you're not getting any of our money. Mm-hmm. Goodbye.
But Le Pen, not only does she want to remove France from the European Union, we're talking about leaving NATO, reinstating border controls.
See, nobody's leaving NATO.
I was going to say, will that actually happen? No.
No.
Absolutely 100% reinstate border controls.
Oh, yeah, that will
These
happen.
These countries want to have control back over and not thank you, Germany, for deciding for everybody that we're going to open up all of our doors. And this is what is happening in these countries.
Angela Merkel pooched that real bad.
Mm-hmm.
Real bad. And that's where the globalists got knocked back on their butts because it was too much. It was never going to work. It was a bad idea. And every country except Germany, Germany too, but every country except Germany seems to have been paying a higher price for it than Germany has.
Mm-hmm.
Germany had, as I've said many times, Germany had reasons for wanting these migrants because they don't have enough young people to keep their pension system going.
Okay, now with the face-off between these two, do you almost see this as like a prelim to what could possibly happen if Le Pen did win, who said, we will have a referendum just like Brexit? It's almost in the eyes of voters saying, all right, if a vote for Le Pen is basically a vote to leave the European Union.
It is and it isn't. It really comes down more to a question of the attitude toward immigrants and the attitude toward terrorism in France right now. And, you know, as I said, heading into the election last weekend, if there was another terrorist attack mm-hmm. in France, that benefits Marine Le Pen. Well, sure enough, there was. And sure enough, Marine Le Pen got a commanding second place share of the vote. 11 candidates. This wasn't a situation where she snuck in ahead of number three or number four. She got twice as many votes as her nearest competitor. And Macron himself only got about 26% of the vote. So they put up a very strong showing. Same rules apply, okay? It's going to take more than a shooting, but if you got any kind of a serious terrorist attack between now and May 7th, you can call Marine Le Pen the next president of France.
Mm-hmm.
That is what will happen, because the French people will say, we've had enough.
Now, if you looked in your crystal ball, and based on that, what do you think the outcome is going to be?
History tells us, and particularly recent history, that candidates who are running in Europe primarily on what are perceived as anti-immigrant or anti-Islam platforms may generate a lot of popular support. That support does not translate at the ballot box.
Mm-hmm.
Le Pen and her party have a very dark past. They were associated with, and not incorrectly, with the neo-Nazi movement when her father was in charge. He almost won the last time there was a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment in France. She is in a position to win now, but the tone of it and the idea that we're going to shut down the mosques and, you know, we're going to ban the burkini and all of these things that are anti-Islam don't necessarily resonate with voters.
It's almost a vote for Macron is a safe vote.
Macron is a straight-up centrist. You know, he's the kind of candidate... He's the kind of candidate we don't even have in this country anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is a straight-up centrist. And the socialists are already making overtures to him, saying, hey, let's have a coalition government. It'll be great.
Yeah, now, from his side, what are the key points on his election, what he is running on?
Stronger ties with the European Union. He wants to go in the opposite direction from...
So you really do have complete opposites. In some factors.
Just because Le Pen got elected, there is no guarantee that you would have an immediate Frexit vote.
No, of course.
You know, there would be a lot...
Is that going to be the new buzzword of Frexit. 2018?
Yeah, Frexit. There'd be a lot to go through to get to that point.
Copywriting then.
Macron is all about trying to build up the labor base. One of the big issues that they have in France right now is their treasured 30-hour work week. They do not want to give up their 30-hour work week.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these candidates have different approaches to protecting the 30-hour work week. That may be a bread and butter issue for a lot of workers in France because they like their 30-hour work week.
Now, right now...
Can you imagine a 30-hour work week?
That would be amazing.
That's half the hours that we work.
I actually do that in this winter time.
I don't know what I do with the extra time.
Now, looking at the state of France right now, you have, especially in Paris, so many areas that are so different. And do you believe that, obviously with Macron, he would unite that, I think, a little bit more than Le Pen?
No, I think...
Or is there even any way of... coming back from that?
I think Macron's attitude toward the immigrants is going to be ignore them and hope nobody brings up the question. He doesn't really seem to have an answer on that front.
Even when you have so much attention going to what is happening with the...
He's a backdoor globalist.
Yeah.
And the globalists are all on board with let the immigrants roam wherever they want to. And this is one of the reasons why the populists have pushed back against the globalists. And really... Speaking about politics in general, we need to get away from this idea of left and right because those are artificial differences.
Of course.
The differences between the globalists and the populists are very real. And there are globalists and populists who are, or there are globalists who are Republicans and Democrats. There are populists who are Republicans and Democrats. It is a much better way to categorize what's happening in the world right now because the question that is facing everyday people is what happened to my job? What happened to our infrastructure? What happened to my pay? What happened to this lifestyle that I was promised? Why don't I recognize this world that's around me anymore?
Wow, does that sound familiar?
Were
those the questions that essentially did get President Trump elected?
Absolutely. These are the questions that were being asked by people in the middle of the country.
So whenever anybody says, how is it possible that he became president of the United States? These were the questions that your average American were asking, and especially in the Midwest, in these areas where his numbers were dramatic.
Yeah, and there's a bigger, WMFO Medford, I want to say that to keep the FCC happy. And there's a bigger issue at play in all of this, which is we are moving into a post-labor economy. And in a post-labor economy, the tension between the globalists and the populists, because the globalists are 100% in favor of whatever the cheapest solution is, the populists are 100% in favor of keeping a job and keeping some kind of a decent lifestyle, technology is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very big deal. The globalists like to talk about technology is great for innovation. You know, we're building innovation economies. What they don't talk about is the fact that there are no humans other than a handful of people writing checks who benefit from innovation economies. You got a very small number of people making billions of dollars. One of the reasons they're making billions of dollars, they don't hire anybody. They don't have any employees. So all the people who don't have the billions to begin with to go be a part of that are left sitting on the sideline. Like, what am I doing? We have to fundamentally rethink all of this.
And this is how people get elected.
And the politicians may not, I don't think our politicians get it. I don't think any of them understand this. I think one of the problems, especially in the United States, is that everybody that we have in Congress is so damn old. They don't even recognize how much the world has changed in the last 10 years.
No, because they don't leave the four walls of Washington.
Mitch McConnell.
It's like a bubble.
Mitch McConnell, you gotta go. John McCain, you gotta go. Barbara Boxer, you gotta go. Nancy Pelosi, you gotta go.
And you see these politicians, though, talking about understanding the average American. Well,
no idea.
Why for so many administrations were problems not solved?
You can't.
Because they weren't actually dealing with the problems of the average American. Again, like you just said, why am I losing the lifestyle that I used to live? What happened to my job? What happened to, you know, comfortably raising a family?
You can't spend 20, 30 years living in that bubble inside the Beltway and claim to know anything about life in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That is not the real world. Okay? They still live in a world of history and tradition and pages and no electronic devices on the Senate floor, while the rest of us spend our days fighting with machinery to get anything done. Assuming that we still have a job that allows us to fight with machinery. And every time you turn around, every time you pick up the technology page, you're reading another article about, oh, we're going to get rid of this entire class of workers with this machine. And we're going to get rid of that entire class of workers with those machines. What do we do with the people? And who has the answer? Is it the populists who say it has to be nations first and we have to look after our own and to hell with everybody else because there isn't enough to go around anymore? Or is it the globalists who say we can manage all of this by moving people into where there are needs and moving people out of places where there are limited resources?
But very few think that way.
Well, the broader reality is, it maybe not as much in the United States of America, but certainly when you get into Europe, you go into Switzerland or you go into Denmark or you go into France or you go into the United Kingdom, those countries are fiercely protective of their culture and what they have built. And one of the things that those countries tend to have in common is that they were founded, built, and developed and improved by white people. Going back 2,000 years.
By their own people.
By their own people, okay? The Germans don't like people who aren't German. And the French don't like people who aren't French. And the Spanish don't like people who aren't Spanish. Mm-hmm. The Portuguese are the exception of the rule. They love everybody.
Yeah, but look at here in the United States and the culture and just environment that we live in. It's to hell with tradition.
Italy's...
Whatever is easiest, quickest, cheapest... That's how we get it done.
Italy's got the Sicilianos running around chasing the immigrants out of town. That's what the mafia is doing these days. They're driving the immigrants off of the island and off of the boat.
Circling around the coast of Palermo.
Hey, you got that? You bought that out of my country.
That's a good imitation.
That's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that is classic European provincial thinking. You know, my world is my street. My world is my neighborhood. My world is my country. If you weren't born here, you don't belong here.
No, and it's
don't
naive.
Come over here and take what's mine.
It's naive to say that these countries don't have problems because they do, but I completely 100% understand your point in saying that they pride themselves on culture, on what they were founded on by the people, and it's their own people. And I'm not saying that we are a country that it should only be Americans because, yes, I do believe in the right way to citizenship.
Sure.
But we're depending so much on technology to run our everyday lives. These new innovations that, yes, I understand, try to make our lives easier. But again, as I say, to hell with the people. What's the cheapest way to do it?
And
can I eliminate a job of 10 people by one machine?
And this is where business has become incredibly short-sighted. And somebody brought this up. There was a piece on I think it was Amazon, written in Bloomberg yesterday, where an analyst was saying, if you get rid of all of the people, how does anyone afford to buy your products? And this is a problem that no one in business, especially on the technology side of things, is even considering. Mm-hmm. They just assume somebody else is going to take care of that for them.
Of course.
And that's sort of the, if I was going to boil down the globalist view to a nutshell, that's pretty much what it is. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, and somebody else is going to take care of that.
That is standard selfish corporate interest.
The populist view is the exact opposite. And this is where things like Brexit come from. The populist view is, let the rest of the world burn. We can take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And no, you can't come in. So those are the two, those are the two real extremes that we're dealing with right now.
Today in sports, questions still remain 1 week after Aaron Hernandez's suicide. Less than 24 hours after Aaron Hernandez committed suicide on April 19th, Worcester County District Attorney Joseph Early revealed that Hernandez had left three suicide notes in the prison cell where he was found dead. One note was written to his fiancée. One note was also written to his four-year-old daughter, but it's still unclear for whom the third note was written. The contents of that final note have become somewhat controversial because of what Hernandez might or might not have written. According to a report from Newsweek that came out on April 21st, the final note was intended for Hernandez's prison boyfriend, a 22-year-old man named Kyle Kennedy. In a statement released Tuesday, Aaron Hernandez's lawyer, Jose Baez, blasted the report while also adding that authorities were leaking information to tarnish his client's reputation. Quote, rumors of letters of a gay lover in or out of prison are false, Baez said. That was via Pro Football. These are malicious leaks used to tarnish someone who is dead, end quote.
Kyle Kennedy issued a statement late today demanding, yes, through his attorney, demanding that he receive the letter.
Mm-hmm.
So Kyle Kennedy has stuck his head up and said, yes, the word that's being used is friends, mm-hmm, that he was close friends. We found out today that Aaron Hernandez had asked to share a cell with Kyle Kennedy. That was denied. We will find out.
The prison is still currently on lockdown.
The gay lover theory holds quite a bit of water in this situation, but may not be the whole story. There are also rumors floating around out there that Aaron Hernandez had other gay lovers, mm-hmm, when he was younger. So
no, I mean, this was something that was circulating in the rumor mill while the court case was going on, in saying that possibly could have been the reason why he shot Odin Lloyd, that he was his childhood friend, that he was the only person that did know of his sexuality. And when he started, you know, talking around town, Hernandez got mad. And I mean, this is a very far out theory.
Yeah.
Could it be possible?
I think it's, yes, I think it's more likely that Odin was taught, and full disclosure, and I have to do this every single time, I do represent a client that represents Ursula Ward, who is Odin Lloyd's mother, so I have to be very guarded about anything that I say. Nothing I say is based on any kind of inside information that I happen to have. Strictly my own opinion, my own thoughts, I find it far more likely that Odin Lloyd was talking about the fact that Aaron Hernandez had shot and killed a couple of people than there was any sort of romantic, mm-hmm, information going on there.
No, of course. When you hear rumors, somebody has this crazy theory that goes on. But, you know, last Wednesday, before the, well, early in the morning, before the show, we found out that, as it came shocking to me, Aaron Hernandez killed himself. And at the time of our broadcast last week, there were rumors going on whether he had John 3:18 written on his head.
3:16.
I'm a good Catholic, I swear. Also, whether he had taken synthetic marijuana.
Which he had. We found that out today. There was,
in the autopsy, there was some in his system.
Flacca! Yeah. No, it wasn't Flacca. It was the other stuff. What's the other stuff that the kids are all using?
Yeah, it's some called, sort of like bath salt.
Is it called hump
situation,
or shrimping or oath? Or I don't know what it's called. It wasn't Flacca.
You know, this is something day to day. It's more and more is going to be revealed. But as you said, we actually do know that this letter was intended for him. He had in the past written letters or this man had written letters to his family and saying, Aaron says hi.
Yeah.
So they were close.
And there's
how close, we don't
know. And there's Flacca on it. So, yeah. he wants to roll it up and smoke it because Flacca.
In food news, we learned someone else doesn't like cheap beer other than me. The state's crackdown on cheap booze isn't over. Regulators at the Alcohol Control Commission have cited Target Store in Fenway neighborhood for violating a long-standing state rule that bans retailers from selling alcohol for less than what they paid. In December, the ABCC said Target's huge Boylston Street location briefly offered a 15-can pack of Founders All Day IPA for $11.99. When ABCC investigators, following up on a complaint about the deal, showed up, asked for a Target manager invoices, and the records indicated that the store had paid the wholesaler $14.25 for each pack. Target faces a May 23rd hearing on the alleged underpricing. The ABCC commissioners ruled that the violation occurred when they could issue a warning and suspend the store's liquor license. So in this brief statement, you really didn't get much coming from Target. Target spokeswoman said it was mispricing. We actually didn't mean to charge that much. Oops. Is this a cover-up, or is this a big company trying to get away with the rules? And in Boston, or here in Massachusetts, law says that you cannot charge somebody less than what you purchase it from a wholesaler.
In all honesty, who cares? Who cares? I mean, look, I understand. This
I care in the sense of
it's a state organization.
I need to look at the smaller business, and of course, they're the ones that brought the complaint forward. But when you have large companies that are, many people may say, like, well, why would a company do that? Why are you going to go to Target, go get your beer? Hey, you're going to spend more money on shopping. All in turn, you end up making the cut.
First of all, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has an arcane and anti-competitive rule on the books that says multi-unit retailers can only sell alcohol at a maximum of 4 locations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So this is one of the very few Target stores that can even sell booze.
That's one of many.
Oh, no.
Many archaic
laws. But this one,
in
particular, should have come off of the books a long time ago. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why you can't go buy beer and wine at Target other than the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has this stupid rule that has been in effect for ages. Now, if Target wants to blow out a few cases of crap IPA at below their purchase price, which you're going to sell out in like half a day, what actual harm is incurred upon competing packies in the neighborhood?
But you have to look at the smaller guy. Why?
What lasting harm is done to competing packies in the neighborhood? Target isn't doing this every day.
You just said it.
This isn't an ongoing problem.
So if you have a problem with it, then take away the law. And as I've said many, many times, there's a lot of rules that are on the books that are so completely out of date. Massachusetts and their liquor laws, it's insane. But these are the rules. Target was trying to skirt the rules. So regardless of
I don't know that Target was trying to skirt the rules, because most retailers today are not going to sell anything below the purchase price, below the wholesale price. They don't do it. They can't afford to. Their margins are too slim.
Yeah, but Target isn't in the business of selling liquor. So what is a way?
All the less incentive for them to do it.
What is a way for a large company that generally doesn't sell liquor to entice customers to come in instead of going across the street?
Yeah.
Yes, you have to look out for the smaller businesses.
In theory, I understand what you're saying. In practice, the likelihood of that being the case here is a trillion to one shot.
Somebody, I don't think it's that unlikely.
Somebody pushed the wrong button in the back room is more than likely what happened here. Because Target, yes, they have a liquor license.
We can infer that and we can guess that, but it isn't proven. So until you prove to me that that's not what they were doing,
I'm going
to
give Target the benefit of the doubt. They've got a beer and wine license for one location in Boston. Okay, Target's business is not contingent on beer and wine sales. Now, does lowballing the alcohol possibly bring in some extra people for the short period of time?
But you just made a point.
When the price is lowballed? Yes, but you're talking about something that's going to last a couple of hours on a Sunday.
But again,
which is already their busiest day of the week.
Why are you going to buy liquor at Target when it is more expensive than going across the street at the Packy?
Because it's...
No, but now it's cheaper. So now I'm going to do my one-stop shop at Target. Essentially, that's what Target does. That's what these big retailers do when they add in beer and wine or they add in a grocery area. Don't get me wrong. I am a huge fan of the Super Targets because they have everything. I don't need to go to the grocery store.
I'm not arguing that point. What I'm arguing is this idea that Target is deliberately trying to drive, you know, the Fenway Park Packy out of business.
And that is not with a
low beer price.
That is not what I'm saying.
But that's what the Commonwealth is saying, and that's what the law is suggesting. That's what you're suggesting. Is it?
No. I'm not suggesting that. I'm not saying that they're trying to put the other businesses out of sale. They're trying to keep you as a customer. In turn, I guess that does take away customers from the smaller packages around the area.
That's exactly what you're saying they're doing. So don't turn around and tell me that's not what they're doing.
This is personal interest only to make themselves a one-stop shop. So you're not going to go across the street. They're looking at themselves and not their competitors. They're not saying...
You're all over the boards here.
No, I'm really
I liked your argument better at the beginning when you were saying that Target was breaking the rules.
They were.
And they were doing it to drive their competitors out of business. That it was an uncompetitive practice. Okay?
It is.
Please stick to that.
They're trying to please make stick themselves a one-stop shop. Essentially, that's it.
Your argument.
So you're not going across the street.
Your argument actually is, and should be, not to put words in your mouth, but this is how you're going to hold your own in this one. Okay? I'm not mansplaining anything here. I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. Your argument is they are lowballing the beer price to steal business from the Packies.
Yes.
Okay? That's your argument.
Mm-hmm.
My argument is they can't afford to do that. They have no incentive to do that. They can't afford to do that.
Why can't they?
Well, because the Commonwealth is going to come in and take their liquor license away.
But if you can get away with it, how many times on the show do we say
they're smart enough not to try and get away with it? Somebody screwed up.
I'm going to propose this question to any, especially woman that has gone into a Target, because I do this every single time where I carry one of those hand holder little cart so I don't fill up a shopping cart.
Yeah.
Essentially what happens at the end of my Target trip, I'm dragging the basket through the store because I have filled it up so much.
Get a normal cart, you...
Because I don't want to go into Target and spend that much money, or Target does that to you.
Then don't go to Target.
Anybody can contest to it. But I love Target. Target's great.
Yeah, but Target's whole philosophy is about you going in there and spending more than you want to.
So yes, Target can do that, because if I'm a college student and I'm, you know, living in an apartment down street and I hear Target is selling their beer for $11.99 for 15 bottles, I'm going there and I'm not going to, you know, Dave's Corner Store.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's what we, when I was in college,
so
what's
yes,
cheap?
They can do that.
Natural light,
baby. Because
once
they bring somebody in on the premises of just buying beer, highly, highly unlikely that somebody is going to walk out of that store with only selling beer.
How much beer have they got?
I haven't been, because parking is so bad in Boston, I haven't been to that Target.
But let's start with that question. How much beer have they got?
I would assume it's a good chunk of the store, considering this is a Super Target.
20 cases?
That has a massive, it's probably much larger than that.
100 cases?
I'm going to say their beer and wine probably fill up an entire two aisles.
200 cases?
I don't know. Would you like me to go after the show and count them out for you?
I want to know how many cases of beer we're talking about here, because you can move 100 cases of beer in Boston on a Sunday in 3 hours.
So when you
especially if you're selling it at below wholesale price.
So I'm sure Target is probably having a higher quantity
at the intersection of Boston University.
Considering the point that you just made about Massachusetts only allows you to have it in four locations. So I'm sure Target in Fenway has a plenty surplus supply.
At the intersection again, of Boston University.
Point, you're not walking in only for beer. You are going to be walking out with other things. So all that money that you were never going to spend initially in Target, you just added $50 onto your final receipt. In turn, Target makes back the money and sales go up.
I'm telling you that if you are running a...
They just found a really convenient loophole.
If you're running a supermarket that sells beer at the intersection of Boston University, Simmons, Emerson, Northeastern, Newberry College, and a couple of other smaller ones, Leslie's over there and some others that I can't even remember, and you got 300 cases of beer, once the word hits the internet, that's gone in 2 hours. Okay? That is not a sustainable business model.
But do you know these numbers?
I don't know these numbers, but I can't imagine that they've got more than 500 cases of beer in a store.
So we're talking about a four-floor Target. Have you even been in this one?
I know how much space 500 cases of beer takes up.
This store is massive. The grocery area,
I know the store
especially
is massive.
Talking about colleges around the area, Target is huge.
Yes.
You get everything
and
there.
And what do you
so
think?
So now you're getting your beer
what
there.
Do you think happens when the word gets out that they're selling cases of beer for $11? Every college student within a 1 mile radius, which is about 100,000, descends on the
place.
We're
not talking about $5 cases of Natty Ice.
Kids know what the beer costs. Trust me. Mm-hmm. The one thing.
Yes,
that,
they do.
The one thing that
but
we knew.
Please find a majority of Boston College students that are buying Founders All Day IPA compared to Natty Light.
If they
found a way of skirting the rules. They cut down the price a little bit. Hey,
they screwed up. They screwed up. It's a one-time mistake. It's not worth the city or the Commonwealth coming down on them.
I will absolutely apologize to you when that comes out from
it will.
The ABCC.
I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. Target's going to say we had a computer error. ABC is going to slap a fine on them. And they're going to say don't do it again. That's the end of it. If they're doing it on a regular basis, that's a different story. Okay?
It's never going to be proven because
you have one incident in isolation. Yeah, you have one incident in isolation. And Target's already said, we screwed up. We're sorry. You know, trust me.
But this has been going on for over a year, which failed to announce.
What's been going on for over a year?
That they've been able to sell liquor.
Yeah, but they haven't been selling it below wholesale for over a year. We have one incident in a year.
That it was recognized and there was a complaint.
Make no mistake, every packy within five blocks of that Target is in there every single day looking at their beer prices.
Now...
Before. How do you think they got caught? How do you think they got caught? If there aren't people from every packy in a five-block radius going in there and saying, what are they getting for this? What are they getting for this? What are they getting for this? Mm-hmm. You have to. Because the law is...
I don't believe that.
The law is on the side of the packies in this case. I just think there's a lot of noise being made here about something that is probably a non-issue. You show me a pattern of malfeasance at Target... And take their liquor license away. End of story. Okay?
But this is all we know in the story.
One incident.
So again.
One incident is a screw up.
If I can get more information.
Please do. I will gladly revisit my attitude on this. But I don't think Target's trying to scam anybody here. WMFO Medford. I have to say that again. In technology news, the war on fake news has a new champion. Wikipedia. Jimmy Wales, co-founder of the internet's most inscrutable online encyclopedia, plans to launch a new wiki-style website where paid journalists will post content.